Hi, I'm Alison from Per Capita.
Hi, I'm Emily from Per Capita.
And this is the first edition of Ideas for Your Ears.
So, Alison, we were inspired by Annabelle Crabb and Lee Sales on their podcast, weren't we?
We thought what we could do is have a chatty podcast about policy issues like they do.
Because we recognise that while a lot of the wonks in the world love reading our reports line by line, there may be people who would like to hear about our policy work in a more easily accessible format.
That's right.
However, I won't be playing the piano, so
I don't think I can sing like Lee either.
Neither of us are Lee Sales.
So, Em, why don't you give us an overview of what's going to be in your report, Spaces for All Ages.
So this is the fourth and final report in our Longevity and Ageing series, The Sleeping Giants of Public Policy. And I'd written three fairly or purely diagnostic reports around retirement incomes, demographics, and housing in the area of ageing. And I really wanted this last report to be a treatment report, if you like, one which comes up with ideas to respond to the issue of participation, social and economic participation, which older Australians struggle with for a whole variety of reasons. So it's quite a positive report, and it has what I think are some creative ideas around three separate policy areas, the first being changing attitudes to age, which the Human Rights Commission can't do alone. The second being around changing the way that we participate in our communities, in our neighbourhoods, and the third area being in the workplace.
Yeah, I really like this report, Emily. I think it's really great, and I like that you've made it more about the ideas rather than looking at specific numbers, because I think it's a really ideas-based area. The idea of participation is so important in our communities for everyone. So why don't we go into a little bit about specifically what's in the report? So yes. With the first one, changing attitudes to age, you want to give us an idea of what's in that section?
Changing attitudes to age covers both social and economic participation. And what I had a look at is public health campaigns and campaigns around changing attitudes to race and to disability, both here and overseas. And I think we all know the kind of big public health campaigns that have been successful in Australia, like TAC. It's kind of ingrained in us now. Thinking about these campaigns and, you know, talking to people who've been involved in these campaigns then got us to thinking about, well, what are some of the creative ideas that we can come up with, which can be both government supported but also supported by community groups and business, to change attitudes around ageing.
I was at the launch of the Human Rights Commission's recent report last week. Joe Hockey and Susan Ryan launched it, and I thought it was really great. Susan Ryan made an analogy between our attitudes towards ageing and our attitudes towards gender. And she was saying that in the 1970s they were having, trying to come up with ways to convince people that women could still stay working after they were married and after they had kids. And at the time that was seen as very radical. And now that just seems a no-brainer. Like, it's just completely straightforward. And as she said, it can take a generation to change, but you've got to get out there and make the change.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a really great analogy. And the other thing she said is, women are half the population, but everybody ages. It's going to affect us all.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the next section, Emily, that you were talking about is workplace and the employment of older Australians.
So this is one of the big ticket items in the budget, and also, you know, economic debates at the moment.
Yeah, everyone's talking about this at the moment.
The IGRs. And what did Hockey say? He said that if...
last week at the launch...
55,
yeah, if someone's pushed out of work from their 55 and longevity is due to reach 95 by 2055 in Australia, that means someone could be out of work for 40 years, which... clearly not a great idea, either economically or even socially, like even at a human level. And I thought that was really good. Hockey really talked about it not just from the economic level, he talked about it at a social level.
Yeah, I think it's really important that the Treasurer highlighted the social side as well as the economic side, because of course the two are so intertwined, because the kind of social lens that you put around ageing determines how people think about whether workers should still be in the workforce beyond a certain age, or whether it's time that they made way for younger workers.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that further, because I thought that was a really interesting point, because you say in your report that often we're presented with this sort of false competition between older and younger workers. And I know I've heard people say, oh, why can't baby boomers all just retire and get out of the way? And there's this real sense that older people need to move on to get out of the way to make way for young people. And you've argued in the report that that isn't the case.
We know that labour forces are elastic. It's not as if there's this finite number of jobs. Labour forces move with the economic cycle. So it's not as if you keep more older people in the workforce that as a result there's going to be less jobs at the other end for younger people. And the second point is that the ILO has done a lot of work on this area to show that the sorts of work that older people and younger people do tends to be different. Not as if they're competing for the same jobs.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we do change as we get older. Yeah. So the example that you've given in the report is the Japanese example?
Yeah, so this is this initiative from Japan called the Silver Human Resource Centre. And to go back a step, the reason why we had a look at this initiative was because we thought, okay, well, what's happening in Australia? What are the initiatives to keep people who are in their mid-careers or later careers in work for longer, whether it's the same work or whether it's different sort of work? And to be honest, the initiatives are very light on the ground.
Yeah, right.
And so as a result, we cast the net wider and looked overseas. And Japan has one of the longest life expectancies in the world, as you know, you've lived there.
Yeah, yeah.
And people work longer into you know, mid and older age groups.
When you're in Tokyo, if you do see older people around you at work all the time, and not even, like even in physically demanding work, yeah, I was quite surprised by that. It's something that really strikes you on the streets of Tokyo that, yeah, there are lots and lots of older workers still employed in work that really you wouldn't see an old person doing in Australia.
Yeah, right. And so the idea is that this could be emulated in Australia, and it wouldn't need to be rolled out nationally at the beginning. Absolutely, we should be looking at seeing how it goes in a couple of areas, but it would be built on Australia's local councils, so that you've got a community hub which it could be built into.
Yeah, it sounds like it would be really useful to have here. So the final part of your report, the public spaces, this is my favourite part of the report. I really loved it, and I love the example that you used. And I'll let you explain it, because I had never even heard of it until you told me about it when you were writing this report. And, yeah, I loved looking at the pictures, and it actually makes me want to go to New York, well, even more than I wanted to before. But I love the High Line. It just looks fantastic. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. So this third part of the report is around spaces for all ages in the neighbourhoods, in the community. In thinking about how our public spaces could be age-inclusive, one of the things which kept coming up in our research was around green spaces. And again, in casting our net wider over to look for some interesting overseas examples, one of the ones which stood out was New York's High Line, which was or is an old disused railway line, which was going to be used for private development. And through a community campaign, the High Line, as it's known, was saved, and the city actually supported that, the City of New York, and commissioned designers to come up with ways that this space could be used for public purposes. And as you said, Alison, that the what they've done with this space has just been, you know, one of the best examples you could possibly think of in
Oh, it looks absolutely
urban
fantastic.
regeneration.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's
Yeah,
public
we should
gardens.
definitely direct people to the website. Like the
Yeah.
photos show it so beautifully of
Yeah.
like a way to reclaim this green space within a metropolis. And there's just this sort of green line snaking through all these buildings and people sitting on it. And it just looks fantastic.
And then, of course, the challenge was to think about the way that this could be emulated in Australia. And, you know, the one thing that we have here is space. And so the issue, though, is that one of the issues that you come up with in terms of transplanting this idea is that in Australia we have suburban sprawl, and the majority of Australians over 65 live in the middle and outer suburbs. So the question was, how do we make something like this possible in Australia, you know, where older Australians live in? Locations in which they live. In terms of the translation kind of issues for the suburbs, the report talks about the need for accessible public transport to any kind of public spaces in our suburbs, and also the need for community involvement, so that this isn't regarded as something which the government, however noble in its intent, is trying to do for the community, that it's something that the community is leading, like in the Highline example, where there's that kind of buy-in.
That's what I loved about this report. I loved that you're looking very realistically at how we can do this in our communities. And as we said before, everybody's aging. So the idea of space that's age-friendly is not, it's not actually just about older people now or into the future. It's actually about everybody and how everybody uses the space. Like, I thought it was interesting when you were, one of the things you say in the obstacles to participation in public spaces, and one of them is like bad lighting and uneven footpaths and things. Well, that's a problem for prams as well. Like, if you're pushing a pram along a footpath, it's not easy either. So some of these things that we think are related to ageing, that there's various times in your life where these things become important. And as you said in the report, it makes you think about things that are important beyond yourself, things that are important for groups that aren't like you. Like, we don't just think about what's needed in our community for our own needs.
Yeah, people with a disability, people with different ethnic backgrounds. And I suppose that's the overarching reflection that I have on the report, and it's a reflection I make in it around, as you said at the beginning, opening up spaces in our communities for everyone. This isn't just that these kinds of initiatives allow us to start thinking about how our workplace, how our neighbourhood, how our society can be more inclusive, generally speaking, not just for specific sections. Which is only a positive thing, I think.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. I think it reads as a really positive report. I like it. Okay, well, thanks for listening to Ideas for Your Ears. We hope you've enjoyed it. This is the first one, so please be kind. We're going to try to do these regularly in the future, aren't we, Em? And we're going to get better. So Emily's report can be downloaded from our website, percapita.org.au. All our reports can be downloaded from our website. If you like the work that we do, and we hope that you do, please think about supporting us. We want to make our work available to as many people as possible, so we keep it accessible online for free. But if you like what we do, please consider supporting us. You can make a donation at our website, or you can become a member of Per Capita and you get some pretty cool benefits, like coming to some of our events and things. Please have a think about it. All the details are on our website.
This has been Alison Orr and Emily Mullane from Per Capita, trying to emulate Annabelle Crabb and Lee Sales. We hope that we are doing them justice. if not, we will hope to do so over the course of our future podcast. Thanks for listening in.